Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q.
Oh, Dr. Trisha, if we were ever going to have an episode that is going to potentially push some buttons or ruffle some feathers, I think it may be this one, because we are talking about children and we are talking about parenting. And there are so many opinions and ideas on how to do that.
Oh, I'm nervous now.
I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be great. But I thought we would kick off today with me sharing a little bit of a story.
Okay.
So, and I'm sure there's a lot of parents who can relate to this. So we went through the holidays recently and our family celebrates Christmas. And like many households, I told my children the story of Santa Claus and how Santa comes to our house and delivers gifts. And we don't do the elf on the shelf, but we had kindness elves that would come every night and deliver a new kindness mission. And, you know, went on and on for a while. Well, my son was about to turn 10 years old and he was still very strongly believing in things. But this year he looked under the tree and he saw the wrapping on the present and noticed that the presents that said they were from me had the same wrapping paper as the presents from Santa Claus. And so it started the questioning process and he said, "Mom, tell me the truth. Is Santa Claus real?" So I kind of turned it back to him and I said, "You know, you tell me, what do you think?" And he said, "No, I think when I'm not here, you go out and buy presents and you wrap them and you put them under the tree." And I said, "Oh, you're a very smart boy. Yes, that is what happens. But, you know, we all contribute to the magic of Christmas." I thought it was the most beautiful monologue about the joy of Christmas that I had ever delivered. And he was pissed. Not so much sad. He was pissed that I had lied to him. And so today's episode is what we are talking about when we tell our children stories, or when we don't tell them a story, when we leave a gap and they have to fill in the story themselves, and why sometimes that can cause unintentional harm or more harm than good. So do you have any thoughts, though, to begin with, on this whole Christmas experience? Is there a thing as Santa trauma?
Yes. And as a matter of fact, a lot of children feel that way, especially if they feel like they're the last in the classroom to understand something. And I actually think this is interesting. It's definitely not Santa, but my son has been writing papers for college admissions. So he's had to write a lot of essays. And one of the things he's been explaining to me is that when he very first started telling people that he was gay, he had a lot of friends that said, "Oh yeah, I already knew that." And he felt actually very deceived that nobody had sat him down and talked to him about, "Do you think that maybe you're gay?" So he actually, it was interesting. He said he feels like in a lot of places, he was the last to know he was gay. So like I said, that's very different from the Santa conversation, but it's similar, especially if our kids feel like they're the last to know something. They're the last in their class to believe in Santa. They're the last to hold on to the belief that their parents are happy, like whatever it is. If they feel like they're the last, it feels like a big deception. And Santa is one of the biggest lies that we tell in our society.
I love that you mentioned that, because I was thinking about it. My whole philosophy on why we went the Santa route is that's how I was raised. I don't recall having any Santa trauma. That's how we raised my daughter, who's 3 years older. She didn't really have any Santa trauma, it seemed like, when she figured it out. But again, my son is the youngest. And so he, as you're saying this, I'm like, he was the last one in the family to figure it out. And yeah, it seemed to be a lot of anger and shame. And then actually one of the first things he asked me to do was to call my partner, Jen, to call his dad, to call the grandparents and let them all know that he knew, so that they could stop playing along with the, "Oh, what did Santa bring you?" Because he didn't want to feel like a fool to everyone else.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that we don't really want to talk about Santa today. We want to probably talk more about this concept of what do and don't we tell our children, and then maybe how or why we tell them. But I am going to share my story of Santa because I feel like it's one of the areas in my life that my mom did it right and we passed it on to our kids. My mom actually never declared that Santa was a being. She always said that Santa is the magic of Christmas. So when we asked her, is Santa real? Her response to me always, and I was 12 by the time it really dawned on me that there was no Santa Claus. But when I would ask her, is there a Santa? She would always say, you know, Santa to me is more a spirit of Christmas. It's the magic of waking up in the morning with Christmas presents under the tree. It's the magic of snow falling and seeing it in the light sparkle. She like created this spirit of Christmas. And she said, and to me, I believe in the spirit of Christmas. When I don't believe in Santa, I don't believe in magic. And that to me was always an answer that felt safe. She never said Santa's not real, but she never said Santa was real. And so there was never this deception. But what I have found even as an adult is that's how I view Christmas. I still view Christmas as a time when everything just feels a little bit more magical to me, a little bit more awesome, like A-W-E-some, you know, like there's just more magic and twinkle. To me, it's about the intention behind what we are and aren't telling our children. Why do we deceive our children about Santa? What are we afraid they're going to miss out on if we lie? You know, why are we perpetuating this deceit?
Because that's what we do. And we just keep repeating the same patterns, right?
Yes, we keep repeating. And it's a social narrative. You know, sure. Santa is a great example of a social narrative.
Sure. I would consider, though, the Santa experience to be maybe a lower risk or a lower harm, I guess, situation. Let's talk about when things get more difficult, when there's a bigger family change that's happening.
Yeah.
Obviously, for me, that was coming out at 38, but also coupled with that, the fact that my partner and I were getting divorced and that we had to share that with the kids.
I think even if there's just conflict in the home, you know, there's conflict over financial resources, or there's conflict over time, or there's conflict over caregiver responsibilities. I mean, there's so many things that we have conflict over in our families. And I think anytime that there is a gap in what's happening energetically in our home and what our kids understand, a lot of times parents think that they're protecting their children from the big complicated issues of adulthood. But what really happens is we're giving our kids this big gap where they don't understand. And because of the way we raise our children in this world, they are going to fill that gap in. People don't like to just not know. So they will create stories for themselves to fill that gap in. So if dad has started sleeping upstairs, parents lie and say, oh, mom is just snoring right now. I'm not getting a good night's sleep while mom snores. But it has gone on now for 2 or 3 months. Kids are smarter than that. And so they're starting to feel in all of these things about why did dad all of a sudden start sleeping on the couch? And their world becomes incredibly unsafe mentally, emotionally, and even physically. They're not maybe at threat of being hit, but nothing feels safe when there's a big gap in the story.
There is nothing scarier than the unknown, right?
Yeah. And especially when the unknown is happening between the two people that you trust. Or I should say the people that you trust to create safety.
So there's a lot of debate in the later to queer community, people who come out later in life that choose to divorce their spouses, as to whether they should mention the why behind the divorce and mention their sexual orientation or mention that the gender they identify as has changed. In our case, I felt like I had to tell the kids why we were getting divorced. Otherwise, it would create so many questions about, you know, well, I thought you were happy together. What happened? And I didn't want them creating stories. Are there situations, though? Obviously, in our case, we had an amicable marriage and an amicable separation. And so we were able to set similar goals for our family and say, okay, we are divorcing. And I know that's hard. And here is why. Mom's a lesbian. Do you know what that is? You know, and my son so famously said, what's a Lego bin? Not a Lego bin, honey. lesbian. And we explained that. But then I think the last piece that really helped them is that my ex-spouse and I had also come up with a plan for the year of this is hard and here's how we're going to get through it and why it's okay. Are there some situations though where you can't let the kids in on the reasons behind the divorce?
So there's actually a lot of debate in this in like the pop psychology world, because the pop psychology world says that it's always best to protect your kids from hard feelings. It's best to not let your kids be weighed down by the burdens of adult worries and fears. The reality is we can't protect our kids from their imaginations. And as parents, we can't understand what their imaginations are doing. The bigger the gap that we've created in what they know and what's really happening is a high risk for high stakes awfulization, which is just the negative form of positive creation. So it's imagination, but it's that worst case imagination. So pop psychology says protect kids. Don't tell the kids everything. But what we see in the research is the kids who know at least the very basics of what's happening are the ones who are able to formulate resilient skills for the current moment, but also generate positive relationship skills, conflict resolution skills, coping skills for the future. So we're actually not doing our children any favors by following this belief in old social narratives that say protect the kids, it's better to stay together for the kids. Like all of that is not at all supported by research and data. The research and data says find the age appropriateness, the mental and emotional capacity of each child, and give them as much information as you have. You know, dad lost his job this year and industry is tough right now for him to be able to find a job. We have faith that there's something waiting for him. We know things will work out, but right now we're going to budget our money in a way that's going to maybe like we're having to say no to a lot of things that we used to say yes to. We will talk with you when we know more, but we just wanted you to know that this is what's happening. So you don't have to, you know, show them your bank account to let them know that you're on a tighter budget. A lot of parents will go into this great, big, huge lecture about how money doesn't grow on trees. Like there's all these things that we start to say when we're trying to lie to our family, friends, and kids. It's better just to say the truth.
Well, and I think the other great thing about the example that you just gave, though, too, is it was very fact-based and not so emotional-based. Like, I am so worried, or, you know, well, dad was slacking off at his job, and if he would have put in more hours, I don't know. There's not shame to it. There's not blame to it. It's just current situation, and here's our plan. So again, we're talking about divorce, and sometimes, or maybe oftentimes in divorce situations, there are a lot of feelings of blame. This parent did something wrong, and that's why we're divorcing. And I think I've seen so many friends that, you know, for the sake of peaceful co-parenting or for the sake of their children, let their children know that they're getting a divorce, but they never go into the why because they don't want to seem like they're blaming the spouse. Yeah. And at the same time, sometimes they're the ones that almost feel like they're suffering more because, you know, kids get upset, have a lot of emotions around the divorce, and may direct that towards the parent that maybe wasn't even the initiator of the divorce.
Yeah, so I actually have two things that I want to say about that, because there's a couple of important things that you just mentioned. So you and I hosted a journaling workshop a couple of weeks ago. And in the workshop, I mentioned that there's an adaptive way to tell ourselves a story and a maladaptive way to tell ourselves a story. The maladaptive way includes shame, blame, and defame. So we are either shaming a parent, blaming a parent, or defaming a parent. Anytime our story includes those three elements, we can trust that it is unhealed emotions and maladaptive. So as we're telling our children stories of major life transitions, divorce, coming out as gay, changing finances, mental illness would be a good one. Anytime that we're telling our kids a story of what's happening and we find shame, blame, or defame, we are maladaptively coping, which means we are also passing that maladaptive coping on to our kids. On the contrary, if we are able to name the event, tame the emotions that are involved with the event, and help our children reframe the consequences or the feared outcomes, then we're actually giving our kids adaptive tools. That's an adaptive storytelling mechanism. not only how we talk to ourselves, but how we share information with our kids. So the example that comes to mind is I have a friend whose husband had been having an affair for 5 years. And exactly what you said is so true. So they got a divorce and dad moved out of the home and they really wanted to protect the way that their children felt about dad. I think they have a 13-year-old daughter and 11-year-old son. So definitely kids that were old enough to understand sexual relationships, sexual intimacy, and partnership. And the kids are both extremely angry at the mom, lashing out that happens when the kids are with her. And the father has moved in now with the woman that he was having an affair with, and they go on family vacations. They're having a great time. Dad looks really, really happy. It looks like dad has moved on and mom is still really struggling. She's having a lot of emotions. She's still crying at night. Ooh, that brought shakiness to me. But they've wanted to protect the husband so much or the dad so much that they're not talking about it. Mm-hmm. So they're actually robbing their kids of quite a few things. But the truth of the matter is when we're dealing with hard situations, kids will project their most difficult emotions onto the parent that they trust the most.
Oh.
So the fact that they are most angry at mom is actually a reflection that at some level, they don't trust dad.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
And also a reflection that they do feel safe with mom. I think when you had brought up that point to me before, you know, I had mentioned one day picking up my daughter from school and how sometimes I feel like I get the worst of her during the day because she bottles up all her emotions and then blah, raging monster at the end of the day. But when children feel safe and feel that they can share themselves, sometimes we get the hard stuff. And so I really appreciate you sharing that because I'm sure there are so many people listening right now who sometimes feel like the villain when they're getting those hard emotions from their children, when in actually they may be doing so much right for
yeah.
their kids.
Honestly, it is hard. And I really feel for the parents who are that person because exactly what you said, they feel like they don't recognize, first of all, that it's safety that they've created for their kids that allows them to explore those big emotions. And I think I've used this phrase on our podcast before, but in this situation, it's really important to be able to ask yourself, what am I making this mean about me? My daughter just came home and she yelled at me and she screamed at me and she slammed the doors. First of all, none of that is a bad thing. That's a sign of a child who's got big, big, big emotions. It doesn't mean it's a spoiled child. It doesn't mean that it's a rotten child. It means the child has emotions. That's all it means. But a lot of times parents need to make that mean something else. It means that I'm a bad mom. It means that I'm not disciplining them enough. So we make it mean something about us and then we fail to be able to respond in a way that allows that child to name, tame, and reframe. If we're taking the shame of our child slamming the door, if we're blaming ourselves for doing something wrong and we're defaming our parenting, then that's maladaptive. Those phrases go to every way that we tell ourselves a story.
Ooh. I also, and I don't know, we're in the midst of football season right now, but I was just thinking about how funny it is that we get so frustrated with kids when they have any other emotion that's not happy or funny or, you know, a little bit of sadness. Yeah, we're good with that. But if they yell or slam things, just like any big sports fan during a football game, we're like, whoa, 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 this is not okay. Anyways, that's a side tangent there.
Well, but it's actually not really because we're not comfortable talking about hard things in our world. So of course, we have a lot of people who physically act out because they can't verbally speak up.
Yeah.
And we've got to pick our poison once in a while in this world. And these hard conversations, like I said, our kids, they are not these blank slates that we think they are. Our children watch TV shows where Disney is full of divorced parents.
Oh, yeah.
Our children know what divorce is.
And death and
yes,
talking woodland creatures. Yeah.
Yes. I'm trying to think of the earliest shows that my kids would have watched. And I'm thinking of Dora the Explorer. That's probably or Blue's Clues maybe was around. Even those, like you've got this little 7-year-old girl who's exploring the world with no parents.
She's never thought of it that way.
She's got a backpack.
This is not okay.
And an animal friend.
Yeah. I can't even let my son walk 5 minutes to school with his backpack without people being like, what kind of negligent
what?
Are you? Yeah. Meanwhile, Dora's out there in the Amazon befriending leopards.
Yes. And who once in a them? While she stops in to see her abuela. Like,
oh yeah.
I mean, we laugh at that, but the thing is like I said, our kids grow up with stories. We read them stories. We have them watch movies that tell stories. We tell them life stories. So our kids know that stories have beginning, middles, and ends. Our kids know what those beginnings and endings often look like. Our kids know, based on the way that they're taught to hear and read and listen to fairy tales, that there is always a protagonist. There's always an antagonist. There's always a villain. There's always a challenge to overcome. And there's always a resolution. But the thing is, so often as parents, we don't want to give our kids this additional stress. So we don't give them the middle pieces of information. Mm-hmm. And then they're like waiting in their own inner storytelling of what might be happening. And our kids will always and forever make themselves the villain of the story.
Yeah.
They know they're supposed to be a villain, and they're not going to make it be mom. They're not going to make it be dad. They're not going to make it be mom's partner. They're going to make it about themselves. The more words we can give our kids about what's happening in that messy middle stage of life, the less they have to make up.
Yeah. And the less they have to blame themselves mm-hmm. if they feel. Yeah. Fabulous. Well, I love the fact that we have connected with so many of our listeners and we get so many private messages on things and that we can have these hard conversations. And so if there's anyone listening today who has a lot of thoughts about this, or maybe you have your own specific situation that you're looking to navigate, we would love to hear from you. So please, you can reach out to our email address, which is lifeandloveinthequeue@gmail.com. I'll put that in the show notes as well. And also we've added to the show notes that Dr. Tricia and I also both offer our own one-on-one sessions. We have talked about launching group Q&A sessions during the month, and we've even recently launched a Patreon where we're offering additional podcast episodes with even more of a deep dive into some of these topics that we're talking about. And this week's bonus content about protecting our kids, I wanted to do something specific for people who are coming out later in life, because there's a lot of discussion about how do I tell my partner that I'm gay? How do I tell my children that I'm gay? How do I tell my family? And kids especially, because what I see a lot is people saying, my child's too young to understand what gay is, but babies understand love. And so if you're looking it from who you love and not a sex act, really, that's what our partnerships are. Everyone who's in a relationship or has been in a relationship knows that it's more than just sex. It's about love and connection. Young kids can understand that. So I want to put together something for anyone who is in that coming out phase where they need some additional words and support. Yeah. So check out our Patreon. We tried to make it very accessible for everyone. And we can't wait to offer you extra bonus materials there.
I think that you just revealed a whole nother podcast episode that we might want to consider. But this was a great conversation. I definitely hope that our listeners, if they have questions, will reach out. I love that extra material, that bonus content you're going to provide. That's a great help.
All right. Have a great day, everyone. Thanks for being here.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveinthequeue@gmail.com. Until next time, Queue Crew.